Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Spend my dollar.
It's not about what you want. It's about what you're willing to do to get it. Run it again.
Hello and welcome.
I'm not going to, so quit asking.
When you give me a hard time.
For the listeners that didn't get to go.
This is the payback.
What you did last year really doesn't matter.
Our goal is to have the kind of team that nobody wants to play.
Hi.
Hello and welcome to a red light edition of the Alabanza Football Podcast. I see you, All-State Executive Brownwater, and cheers to you. What's that, red light edition? I really should say non-blinking crimson light edition, but no, under no circumstances are we calling this the bittersweet edition. So many headlines describing Alabama's win as bittersweet. It's almost dad joke territory. Get it? Big win, non-playoff game in the, wait for it, Sugar Bowl. But it's not true. This game was cathartic. It actually felt good. And frankly, I like my dad joke better. Watching a bowl game with my daughter earlier in the week, we mentioned that Clemson and Tennessee were playing in the, wait for it, Orange Bowl. My daughter responded, "That's just way too much orange." Well, that's just something you never forget. For me, Alabama's win was, it was all sweet. It was pure double oat goodness. The team showed heart, competitive spirit. It played its best game of the season and finished the right way. All tenets of Saban's process. It was the great ending, bolstering an otherwise mediocre movie. Just ask Michigan and Ohio State how they feel this morning with their playoff losses. I mean, sometimes a happy ending is just what you need. Get your mind out of the gutter. You know who I'm talking to. Real quick, three administrative points before we get going. One, please rate and review the podcast. We enjoy and appreciate your support. We want more of it. It helps people find us. We want to grow the show. January 1, Happy New Year, everyone. There's a lot of non-game action news that's going to break this week. Players declaring for the NFL, transfer portal activity, coaching move activity. All of that stuff or some of that stuff may break between recording this and when you listen to it. We'll have some additional shows in which we will cover all of those topics. And just a real quick PSA, don't touch me, bro. And thanks, Sarkisian, for that passionate reminder there. All right, let's jump in as we do. We'll start with offense. And again, this is a little sad, I guess, but probably for what will be the last time, we'll start a podcast talking about Bryce Young as he looks that he's going to go on to the NFL. And, you know, gosh darn, he probably should. I think this may have been Bryce Young's best performance. He certainly ranked his highest or his best career quarterback ranking, which is outstanding. He achieved second place all-time Alabama touchdown passes with 80 on his career, second only to Tua. who sits at 87. Bryce had 5 touchdowns on the day. Those 5 allowed him to pass A.J. McCarron. So 5 touchdown passes on the day against only 6 incompletions. He had nearly as many touchdowns as he did incompletions. There's a level of perfection that accompanies that, and certainly no interceptions on the day. Bryce had 321 yards passing. He has thrown for more yards, but his effectiveness is just outstanding. 5 touchdowns, as we said, 5 different receivers with touchdowns. And so there's sort of an even distribution there. And there were only 7 receivers or pass catchers on the day. So nearly an Oprah moment with you get a touchdown, you get a touchdown, you get a touchdown. So nearly everyone who caught a pass caught a touchdown, which is pretty good. You know, it's likely, we said the last review that we have in Bryce, and we always talk about that's a Bryce stat line, or this isn't a Bryce like stat line, and this very much is a Bryce like stat line. So it's fitting, you know, plus 300 yards, 5 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. It's an incredible performance. His play, Bryce Young's play, sparked a 35-point unanswered streak. Alabama went down by 10. Not that long later, it's 35-10. And so Alabama rattled off 35 unanswered points. And there was a stretch, and it stretched over half. So we're talking game clock, not sort of time clock. But over game clock, Alabama scored 21 points in just over 2 minutes of game clock. And so some of that was the result of turnovers, special teams play, and then certainly a big play by Bryce driving the ball down the field 98 yards going into half. I would have liked – this is a nit, but it's what we do. We say what we see and what we like and what we don't want like. I really would have liked for Bryce to have come out probably a series or two early. And that's not a knock on Bryce by any stretch. I reached the point in the game where I just really wanted to see the young guys. And I wanted to see Milroe and Ty Simpson play. And I especially, God bless Milroe, but especially wanted to see Ty Simpson get some shots at slinging the ball. And it didn't happen. And so Milroe came in, but it was a little bit later. Again, a series or two later than I would have liked. Alabama scored more points, which padded Bryce's stats or plumped them. And as a result, Alabama was really not passing the ball at that time. So again, that's a nit. I really liked the fact that Bryce ran back out. We ran a play, although I would have preferred to have done it with a tight end. Again, we're being nitpicky here. But we got the standing ovation for Bryce where he went back onto the field. There was a play, there was a pause between the action. And then there was a moment where he exited the game as Milroe came in. They shared a moment, but the standing ovation that Bryce got was phenomenal. And for all the Alabama fans that were there, I was not able to go. Thank you for punctuating that moment in the way that you did. Let's talk about running backs. It was an effective committee overall. Jahmyr Gibbs had 15 carries for 76 yards. He had 2 receptions for 66 yards. Including a 60-yarder that led to Alabama's first touchdown and really sort of hot-wired or jump-started the Alabama offense. So that certainly was good. It was a nice play by Bryce, sort of moving a little bit, knowing that he had Jahmyr cutting across sort of as an outlet and laying the ball out for Jahmyr to run into. It was a really nice execution on both parts. Jace had 7 carries, Jace McClellan 7 carries for 42 yards and a touchdown. Roy Dell had 5 for 23. He had a really nice special teams play we'll talk about in a minute. And Jamarian Miller, with Trey Sanders opting out and further electing not to play, not opting out, but entering the portal and then electing not to play while he's in the portal. Jamarian Miller got some additional work. He's the kid we've been talking about all season. We've got to find him more opportunity, and because we don't want him to sort of get paved over, because we know what we have with Jason Waddell. We're bringing in Alabama's recruiting class has brought in, I think, the 3rd and 4th nationally ranked running backs. Is that right? Highly ranked. Maybe it's 1 and 2. I don't know. Highly, highly ranked running backs. All the excitement's going to be over the new guys, which is fantastic. And there's almost a sort of a squish sandwich there where Jamarian's right in the middle. middle. I've got two guys ahead of me that have been in the system for a couple of years. I've got the two, you know, new hot guys off the street behind me, and I'm sort of stuck in the middle with you. And so Jamarion Miller had three carries for 44 yards. He had Alabama's longest run of the day, 38 yards. Remember, Gibbs's play was a reception. And so Jamarion had the longest run of the day, 38 yards. And so I am hoping that he feels the love and that he is keen on sticking around. So we'll see how that plays out, because Jamarion Miller is a phenomenal running back, and he's certainly someone Alabama fans need to rally behind. I encourage you to rally behind because I think he can be a star. So, and that's not something the other guys can't either. I just think he's got it. And I liked the TV crew said this, and presumably you take what the TV crew says with a grain of salt, but you like to think they're getting sort of intel from the coaches and, you know, comments that coaches make. And they commented that the coaching staff looks at Jamarion Miller as a Josh Jacobs type of player. That's exciting. That's exciting because it could mean I always thought Josh Jacobs, he was like third or fourth in the depth chart if you really line him up. But he had like a carved out little niche package that he ran. And in the way that Saban says there's more than 11 starters, he was almost the starter in that little niche package. And so he always felt like he was one of the frontline guys, even though technically, if you line him up, he might have been the fourth wide receiver. He felt more like a starter. And so maybe there is that type of package for Jamarion Miller. That'll be interesting to see. Spring, unless he sort of gets a wild hair and decides that he's going to leave, which I so hope that he doesn't, spring might be a very interesting time to see how Jamarion Miller is deployed. So we'll see how that goes. Wide receiver, I think, and maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I know we had the transfer portal players, but for my money, the wide receivers, the team played like there was more clarity at the position. There were only four wide receivers that caught passes, and there was a tight end and the two running backs each had a reception, but there were five sort of designated pass catchers, if you will, tight end, four wide receivers. Each of those five caught a touchdown pass, which again, sort of ironic or iconic. I thought nearly each of those plays were iconic, sort of Bryce Young sort of moments. There was the, you know, the scramble in the back of the end zone to hit Isaiah Bond, which was a phenomenal play by both quarterback and receiver. You know, the outcut by Cam Latu, it's sort of, that's a specialty that he has right at the goal line. And so that was nice to see that play. Just the pinpoint placement of the pass to Ja'Cory Brooks and just really just throwing it out there and letting Ja'Cory just run through the ball, catch it, and then run out of the end zone. That was a particularly beautiful pass, I thought, because the defender was in excellent position. And the defender, I don't want to say, and I sort of wrestled with this as I was watching the game, I don't want to say the defender gave up on the play. The defender gave up on his technique because the defender turns to the field side, which is the play is unfolding. Ja'Cory's running towards the sideline. The receiver really turns the wrong way because as he turns to his inside shoulder, the ball comes across his outside shoulder. And as he turns, the defender, the cornerback, almost slows down. And Ja'Cory sort of bumps him. And it's not a push off. It's not anything like that. It's just as the receiver turns his head, he slows down a little bit. And Ja'Cory sort of runs across him, just barely grazing him. And it's almost like, get out of my way. I'm going to where the ball is and you're doing whatever it is you're doing. And then it looked like there was a bigger sort of separate. By the time Ja'Cory caught the ball, it looked like there was a bigger separation between them than there really was, because the defender sort of gave up on his technique. Had he stayed with his technique, had he just closed his eyes and put his arms up in the air and literally like given up the play and like flailed, he probably would have batted the ball away and, you know, looked like a hero. But he sort of gave up on his technique and allowed the touchdown to play. And it was beautiful because the ball was just placed. It was like it was, you know, Bryce was throwing it into a basket, and then Ja'Cory just ran under the basket and scooped it up. It was just incredible execution. sometimes plays just resonate with me. They have a beauty about them, and that's one of those plays. And I go on and on about them when they do happen. So that is certainly one. I like the payoff play to Burton. I think the receivers kind of got her, the TV crew kind of gave Burton a tough way to go because Bryce missed him on a couple of early passes. I don't think it was Burton. I think it was Bryce. At least, you know, from my seat on the couch. And so I'm glad he got the payoff pitch for the touchdown and sort of wrestled with the defender. He knew that was his and he was going to grab hold of it. So I thought that was nice. Overall, again, I thought the wide receivers played with a certain clarity. And, man, I'm going to tell you, we had some defections. Alabama had some defections, if you will, at the wide receiver room, some of which were surprising. The Aaron Anderson, true freshman leaving, truly that surprising. You know, JoJo Earl is surprising. He's had sort of the injury bug. Trayshawn Holden leaving was a little bit surprising because he had an opportunity to be one of the top guys earlier in the season. I think there's some writing on the wall that maybe he saw. But even with the guys leaving, there's so many talented youngsters still on the roster. And then with the new recruits coming in, and boy, that JUCO, Malik Benson, I'm super excited to see how he does. And so spring is going to be really, really exciting because I think the competition at the wide receiver, I'd love me some Isaiah Bond. I'd love me some Kendrick Law, some Kobe Prentice. Burton's going to be back. Ja'Cory is going to be back. So many of the guys. I'm excited about this, what this wide receiver room is going to look like. So more to come as we get sort of more into the offseason. And we know who's on the roster because I suspect there's probably a name or two that will enter the portal or decide to transfer. So we'll see how that goes. Offensive line, just real quick, I thought the offensive line played really, really well. I'm not real sort of technical in sort of the line play. Was this their best play of the season? Maybe so. I thought they played very, very well. Tyler Booker, give him a little bit of a shout out. He started the game. And played throughout at the left tackle. So the spot that Javon Cohen left, which was a surprise that he did, but, you know, whatever the story is there, I don't know it, but good luck, young man. But Tyler Booker stepped into that position. He's been rotating into that position. Tyler Booker's the guy that we say, hey, he comes in on a third series and plays the third and fourth at the left guard, and then he plays the fifth and sixth at the right guard, and then he rotates out, and so everyone's sort of rotating. You've got three players playing two positions, and so Javon Cohen rotated himself out of the rotation. Tyler Booker got, I think, what would officially be his first start, and then played the entire game, at least through the meaningful snaps. When you start rotating subs and the game's over, I don't really count that. And so good on him. Boy, I think he's going to really be a phenomenal player as he gets more time in the system. He might be one of the best guards in the conference as early as next season. So we'll see how that plays out. Offense, let's wrap up offense. Let's give our mini game ball. I think I haven't been doing that every game. So we'll try to get back into that routine. It's sort of a fun little thing that we do. Mini game ball is going to Robbie Outs. He had an incredible block on Jameer's 60-yard sort of reception. So he got out and made a nice block. He made a couple of other nice blocks. He was available for passes. He sort of flared out a couple times and was available for passes. I think his game is getting better and better. His contribution and almost everything he does is sort of a, we call him a halfback, call him a tight end, call him whatever the hell you want to. He plays the fullback position. And so almost anything that a fullback does, unless you're Mike Allstadt or Tom Rathman, youngsters look up those guys. But unless you're one of those guys, almost anything you do as a fullback is in the realm of mini game ball. And so I thought Robbie played really, really well. It'll be interesting to see and there's so many dynamic explosive weapons. It'd be neat if there could be a way to sort of bring back some of the old school tight end play or fullback play, because I don't think there's much that I love more than a fullback making moves in the open field. So hopefully he'll have an opportunity to do that. I'm also going to give a shout out to Chip. who was on our sort of on-game chat, because I think he called out that mini game ball really as the play happened. So good on him, and good on Robbie.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
All right, let's flip the field and talk defense. And I, you know, there's sort of something we do when we talk defense. It wasn't great and it wasn't terrible, and then we sort of talk about the differential. And that's really what we have with the Alabama defense on Saturday. It was what we call serviceable. You know, you could say, you know, Alabama defense allowed the team to get into a 10-point deficit to start the game. You know, the counterpoint is the Alabama defense only allowed 10 points to the opponent while the game was still a contest. You could say that the Alabama defense allowed 10 play plus drives, which is true. You could say that the Alabama defense allowed a goal line stand just before half that contributed to a 14-point turnaround. You can also say that the Alabama defense had 4 3 and outs. You can say the Alabama defense allowed 35 minutes, 4 seconds of time of possession. You can say, hey, the Alabama defense had 2 turnovers. And so some of that time of possession was empty. The goal line stand came right at the end of a 17-play drive. And so, damn it, 17 plays down to the 2. But, well, that's where goal line stands happen, on the goal line. And so you got to have the bad almost to have the good in that regard, with the 2 turnovers. One of the interceptions, it was a turnover on downs on the goal line stand. One of the turnovers was at the end of a multi-play drive just early in the game. And so it just sort of neutered the scoring opportunity there. You can say, hey, Alabama defense allowed an 88-yard run by Deuce Vaughn, who's a 2-time All-America, by the way. So dude has skills. You can say that 88-yard run is the longest run Alabama has allowed in the last 20 years. And it's the longest run of Saban's career at Alabama. And those will be true statements as well. You could say that Kansas State, outside of the 88-yard run, only had 103 yards rushing on the entire rest of the day. And Deuce Vaughn, remember, 2-time All-America, outside of the 88-yarder, he averaged only 2.1 yards per carry outside of that one play, which, when I think about 80-yard runs under Saban's tenure, I think about Virginia Tech a number of years ago in the Chick-fil-A Bowl sort of season kickoff classic type of game. And we just had a run fit. We were killing them, and I think we ended up beating them, you know, 25-7. And it was an 80-yard run right up the middle. You think, how did you let them run right up the middle? Because someone misses run fit. And so that's what happened, I don't know, 10 years ago. And frankly, that's exactly what happened on this 88-yard run. The guard was able to knock Tua out of the play, and it was a reach. It was a reach block by the guard, and Tua just got sort of wrapped up in it, and it created a lane. And so had Tua Tua been able to get another step inside into the hole and do the run fit, it's a 2 or 3 yard gain. And so that's not me mad at Tua Tua. It's simply to illustrate, just like we did with the Vartek game, is that one miss run fit, one false step, one misstep, letting that guard get to your shoulder and knock you out of the hole is sometimes all it takes for a huge explosive play. If everyone else is managing their responsibility, receivers downfield, they've got their run fit. Sometimes one player who owns that run fit is all it takes for a big explosive run like that. And that's not excuse making. It's a little bit of explaining, and it's a little bit of like, damn it. But when you take that out and you look at how effective the Alabama defense was in run support for the balance of the day, well, shit, pretty good. And that's certainly what we saw. I will say this, you know, Alabama played more three pure DLs. Alabama always looks like it's a four-man front, but keep in mind that it's a four-man front because it's two walk-up defensive ends, Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. And so a lot of times Alabama's really only playing two authentic or pure DLs. And a lot more of the time Saturday, and I think it was in response to the expected running game, Alabama played more three DLs, pure DLs. And so I think that contributed to K-State struggling in the running game. I will say this, in Saturday's Zoom, we spent a great deal of time talking about, hey, what are the activities that Alabama defense can do to improve? And one of the things that we talked about was playing more pure defensive linemen. Let's get back to three and four pure defensive linemen with pure defensive ends and see where that gets us from a defensive standpoint. So it was interesting to see almost some of that materialize same day, just later in the afternoon. That Zoom's available. You know, go join the recording of that Zoom is available for those that subscribe to all that. All right, Will Anderson registering. Just a couple more things. It was almost diabolical that the three leading receivers for Kansas State each had exactly 48 yards. So that's interesting. That stood out to me is interesting. And then when I looked at who the players were, I especially got a kick because one's a tight end, one's a running back, and one's a white possession receiver. And so that, I think, is the most Alabama thing ever, that the opponent's leading receivers all have the same amount of yards, and it's a tight end, and it's a running back, and it's a possession receiver. So I got a big kick out of that. Let's see. We talked about the three DL sets. Will Anderson registering no stats is, I think, for me, perfect. We talked about Bryce having a perfect Bryce stat line. Well, hell, I think Will Anderson logging no stats is a perfect Will Anderson stat line. And if you've listened, then you know what I mean by that. What I mean by that is that Will Anderson should get a stat tax from other players that are making plays, because often so much of the attention goes to Will that, you know, sometimes when they double and triple team him, it is hard for him to make a play. Or he gets to the quarterback the split second, because he gets to the quarterback, knocks the quarterback down, affects the quarterback, but the ball just gets out of his hand just in time. And even if it's an incomplete pass, it often doesn't register as a stat. But the guy on the opposite side, or a guy up the middle, or someone that's running a stunt with Will, they'll get the tackle, they'll get the sack, they'll get the TFL. And so we always sort of jokingly say that Will Anderson's stat line is not representative of his contribution to the game. And so we say that quite a lot. And so we say he should have a stat tax on his line mates. And Saturday is really just a great, perfect example of that. I will say that he was on a limited rotation. And I think that the university tried to ensure Bryce and Will, and I can't speak to other players, Saban specifically mentioned, so that if they were injured in the game, that they would, you know, sort of be compensated. So I don't know how the actuarial model goes on something like that. It seems like it's more challenging to have that type of actuarial model on a linebacker than it is a quarterback. And so Will came in pretty consistently on third and longs, but not first and second down. And so somehow I think there was an actuary somewhere, a bean counter somewhere, that was doing the math on that, which is infinitely interesting to me. But I think that contributed to Will seeing limited action. But he did compete. He did play. He did practice. No one practices football because it's fun. It's always hard work. And so the leadership that he demonstrated, don't hear me take away anything from Will Anderson on the field. He did see limited action, but he did contribute. If you went to look at the stat line to find his contribution, you're not going to find it. If you watch the game, you would see Will Anderson's contribution. Now there's a host of players that also had phenomenal days on defense. Brian Branch just played himself up multiple picks in the first round. He had 12 tackles, 11 solo. 11 of his 12 tackles were solo. And we talk about sometimes the ratio of tackles you're in on versus solo. Are you carrying your own water, or are you rolling up on a play? Now, look, I like gang tackling, but when you have 10 tackles and two solos, that's different than 12 tackles, 11 solos. And so Brian Branch is a solo tackler. He does his own work. He added to his stat line. He had a sack, he had four TFLs, and an interception. So in my notes, I wrote, wow. Brian Branch had himself a day. And if there was any question, GoPro or not, I think that's the home run sort of see ya. Probably encourages him to move on. And as much and we will miss him. Brian Branch will be one of those guys that we will miss. If there's lapses in the defense, guys, what's going on? It's because we don't have a Brian Branch out there next season. And that's not me berating the guy still on the team. That's a statement of praise for Brian Branch. DeMarco Helms was in on 13 tackles. Most of those were solo. Jordan Battle was in on 9 tackles. He had an INT. Deontay Lawson, his tackle count wasn't as impressive as I kind of expected it to be. But, man, he's all over the field. He's in coverage. He's chasing after the quarterback in the backfield. He's stunting. He's blitzing. He's tracking down the run. Deontay Lawson, we mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. Write it down. Remember his name. Future star at the linebacker position for Alabama. Malachi Moore, I think he had his best performance of the season in my book. He had 4 tackles, a sack. He was blitzing, but he was steady. The big thing that we've talked about Malachi Moore over the second half of the season is that he's going to make a mistake. He's going to make a miss somewhere. And Saturday, he had no misses. He got better by cleaning up his floor, by raising his floor. He didn't raise his ceiling. He raised his floor, which made his average play better. And so there's a lesson there that I know I could play from. But Malachi Moore, I thought, had his best game of the season. Jaheim Otis, I just want to have a moment for Jaheim Otis. The announcers were talking about him. And then, like, right on cue, Jaheim Otis had, in a pure sort of football way, had one of the most beautiful plays of the game. He just man up on the center, put the center on skates, drove him back, and then raised his arm and batted the ball. It's as close to one person beating 11 as you're ever going to get in football. And he just, over the center, just drove him back into the quarterback or right up to the quarterback, and then raised his arm his quarterback went to throw and batted the ball down just sort of harmlessly, costing K-State a down. Phenomenal play. Those are just exciting football plays. And so that was a great one to see. And then I'm going to go mini game ball on defense, and I'm giving it to Kool-Aid McKinstry. Kool-Aid had a couple of great plays in some tight coverage that was tight enough that I've seen those be called as pass interfection, pass interference. I thought they were clean. They were just physical. But that's not why he gets the mini game ball. McKinstry gets the mini game ball because of a play he didn't make, but for sensational effort that he gave to the play. On Deuce Vaughn's 88-yard run to the offense's right, to the offense's left, and the defense's right, but to the offense's left, McKinstry was the corner on that side. And McKinstry chased that play down all the way across the field, all the way to like the 2-yard line, and he got a hand on Deuce and tried to sort of push him out, and just Deuce's momentum and the distance and the angle, he wasn't able to push him out of bounds. but at no point did he ever give up on that play. And so Deuce scored, but McKinstry's effort was nothing short of outstanding. And certainly that's a player that's bought into the game, that's bought into the team, that's bought into playing for his teammates. And there's a lot of goodness that goes into a player demonstrating that kind of effort. And so I give Kool-Aid McKinstry full props for that. Let's talk special teams. Will Reichert only had one field goal opportunity, and dang it, it was a 49-yarder, and he booted it through. I was so excited when he was going to have an opportunity and a little bit nervous because, damn it, I knew that he, you know, he's declared he's going to go try to seek his fortune in the NFL. And so let's make this one because we love you, buddy. And, boy, he marched that 49-yarder right down Main Street. It was beautiful. Ohio State would have been proud. And then he was perfect on his PATs, 6 for 6. So that's awesome. James Burnup had a decent day. He had 5 punts for a net of 192. That's an average of 38.4. He had a long of 40. That average is lower than we'd like. We'd like his average to be up closer to, you know, 42, 45, and that range is really what we want. But 38 with a long of 40, that means he had, and I think he had one inside the 20, but that means he had a tight grouping. The standard deviation in his punt distances was grouped pretty tightly to have an average of 38 and a long of 40. I mean, do the math, right? Everything had to have been clustered pretty closely. By comparison, this has gotten to be sort of an interesting thing that I do, and I'm not a statistician by any stretch, but by comparison, the Kansas State punter, Ty Zettner, he had 5 punts as well. His total was 210, so 210 over 192. So looks like he has a better day. His average is 42, which we want an average of 42. That's in the wheelhouse of what we want. He had a long of 53. We love those even more. But think about his distribution. His standard distribution was much higher. And in fact, we recall that he had just a pure stinker punt that went, you know, 24, 25 yards. And so you'd almost just, hey, if you're going to give me 38, that sucks. But just give me 38 consistently. We can plan around it. And like, you're going to give me a 53-yarder one time and a 23-yarder another time. I can't do anything with that. And, you know, in terms of coaching and sort of building your base, building your floor. Saban always talks about build your floor. And so 38 is a low floor, but I can build it if I know what you got. And the standard deviation for the other punter is just too much. I think that's why we've seen some punters. Ty Perrin, I think, is a good example. He has a leg. He can boot the ball, but he'd have some stinkers. And so I just think Saban wants a steady floor. Give me a steady floor. We'll figure it out. And so anyways, that's more than we ever talk about punters, but that's what you get. Kool-Aid had a punt return. It was only one 15-yarder. It was good to see him at least get one. We're going to talk about kickoff returns because, you know, it just gets my goat sometimes. I love Jahmyr Gibbs. Don't hear me say that I don't. He had a total of 173 all-purpose yards on the day. We've talked before, 76 of those were rushing, 66 of those were receiving, and he had 31 on kick returns. And so, you know, that 31 is not a huge number. It gets him from a total of about 142 total yards to 173. Well, 173 is a more impressive number, and so that 31 sort of makes you say, wow. A little more than the 142 would, which is still a nice number. And so those are material yards to his stat line. But let's take a look at him. He had 31 punt return yards on 2 kicks. One of those kicks was a 30-yard return to the 31. Well, we know, say it with me, they'll give you the ball for free on the 25. And so to go from the 25 to the 31 isn't a 30-yard gain. It's a 6-yard gain. And the other punt return or kickoff return that Gibbs had was a 1-yard return to the 16. And again, they'll give it to you for free on the 25. And so when you get it to the 16, to me, that's a 9-yard loss. And so the stat line
for me really looks like a negative 3 kickoff return yards as opposed to a positive 31. And so that would get his yards for the day down to 139, which is even less impressive than the 142. That's not me being mad at Gibbs at all. It's just that's how I look at the game. That's how I look at those plays. And, you know, have the ability to return, you know, the Kenyon Drake play for a touchdown. Let's have the opportunity to do that if you need it in a game. And that game against Clemson, Alabama certainly did need it. And this game against Kansas State didn't. And so why not make the smart football play and put both of those at the 25? You'd rather be at the 31 than the 25, but you'd rather be at the 25 than the 16. And so net it out. No one has to run a play. No one gets hurt. There's no penalties. There's no sort of bullshit that that can go with it. It just seems like the old coach that said, and I can't remember, maybe it was Bryant. It's been attributed to a dozen guys. But, you know, when you throw the ball, three things can happen and two of them are bad. So run it. I have that same sort of curmudgeon thought to kickoff returns. A couple of bad things can happen, and, you know, versus maybe one good thing. And so just don't do it. And with the rules today, the rules are set up. They're going to give it to you on the 25, even if you fair catch it at, you know, shit in the goal line or on the one, they're going to march it out to the 25. So, all right, enough about that. Last sort of special teams thing, Roydale Williams had an onside kick recovery. And I'll be honest, I almost don't want to say this because I wish I feel like I should know this, but I don't remember seeing Roydale on the kickoff coverage team all season. And so maybe he's been there and, you know, he's there for this purpose and he's there all the time. Maybe there was a switch where Alabama brought him in. There's a mystical thought that maybe I wish that we had brought him in sort of expecting something. But when Roydale, you know, got the ball, recovered the ball, and he looked up and the camera was just somehow just right on his face. And just the expression, and again, maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but the expression on his face was almost like, how the hell did coach know that the ball was going to come right to me? Because it never comes, you know, right to me. And so I thought that, to me, that was sort of a funny moment. But coming out of half, Kansas State said, we're playing, you know, for keeps. We are outmatched here. And so we're going to try to make something happen. And it didn't. And then, you know, we talked about Alabama scoring 21 points in just over 2 minutes of clock time. Well, that contributed because Alabama scored like right going into half with a couple seconds left on the clock, and it got the ball, was getting the ball just anyways, but got the ball in like tremendous field position because of the onside kick. Alabama scored very aggressively off of that. And then I think it was an interception. It was Brian Branch's interception that came next on the very next possession. And it was early in that possession for K-State. So it was like on the 30, and Alabama scored, you know, pretty aggressively on that. So Kansas State certainly contributed to Alabama scoring those points, but Alabama took advantage of those opportunities. And again, I'm sort of riffing off of this, but the onside kick that Roydale recovered, that's always a lot of fun, and it's always a big play. All right, so what's next? Well, likely a lot is going to happen. Again, we sort of talked about this, sort of disclaimed it at the beginning. We're recording this Sunday, and a lot's going to start happening, maybe as early as today. Certainly as we get into the week, the business week, players are going to declare for the NFL. Some have already said they're not. Some have been sort of noncommittal of what they're going to do. We're going to start finding that stuff out. Everyone, you know, the worst-kept secret in college football is Bill O'Brien's going to the Patriots. We've been saying that all season. And so in his pressers leading up to the Sugar Bowl, he said, we're focused on this game, which is all the right answer. Well, that game's done now. And so whatever's going to happen is now going to happen. And so by the time you listen to this, some of this may have already started to unfold, or not unravel, but sort of unfold. And so hear me saying, I don't know what's going to happen. By the time you listen to it, well, some of it started to happen. And so, you know, it's a little bit of a disclaimer based on timing of recording and getting it out, coaching moves, whatever it's going to be. We're going to have upcoming shows on these topics. I think this is a pivotal offseason, and we've talked at it. We've talked to it. this sort of, especially I think the second half of the regular season. And so here we are, the off season is upon us. And so we saw what recruiting did. We'll have a show where we talk about that a little bit. We've seen some of the roster management, and I use that sort of as a blanket term. And we've talked about some of it, and we're going to spend more time talking about some of that. And then we're going to have changes across the coaching staff as well. And so it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. There's not sort of a timeline or duration. Some of this could happen well into the summer. We've had transfers come in April and May. So we'll see how that plays out. But we'll have additional shows on those topics. I have a handful of other topics that I want to try to explore this offseason. So I've said before, hey, we're going to try to do some offseason shows. And so essentially I'm saying that again. Hopefully I have a better sort of grasp in my mind about what I want some of those topics to be. And so stick with us for those. And we certainly look forward to that. I want to wish everyone happy holidays. It was probably too early to say that, you know, back before. So now I'm saying it when it's too late. I appreciate you all. If you're listening to this, holy cow, I really do appreciate you. I hope you've had a great, phenomenal holiday season, New Year season. I hope 2023 is phenomenal for you. And so with that, why don't we all sort of join hands and say this together. Say it with me. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide. Thank you all.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just to shout out a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach? Of course. Roll Tide.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.